Welcome to another episode of the Edible Valley Podcast. I am Blaine Prowse.
And I am Jonathan Fraser. And we are here to invite you to join with us on our ongoing adventure touring the Comox Valley, as we like to think of it, the Edible Valley.
On today's episode, we are talking with Chef Aaron Rail of Avenue Bistro. Welcome, Chef.
Thanks for having me.
No problem. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, it's great to have you here with us.
Apparently, there's lots of people that want to hear what you have to say about
Avenue Bistro.
Yeah, Avenue Bistro and your chefing skills and things like that. So that's great. It's good to have somebody new and exciting in studio with us here.
That's right, to actually have another chef in with me. That's great.
I mean, not to take anything away from our previous guests, because everybody's been new and exciting.
True.
But
I guess before we get to that, we just want to sort of talk a little bit about what's been going on the week. Myself, personally, I've been pretty much locked in the cafe. It's summertime, so it's getting as many meals in and out as possible. So that's where I've been for the last week. Kind of missed out on everything. I didn't even get to the farmer's market today, unfortunately.
Right.
But I've been staying well connected with a bunch of farms and getting some deliveries from them. And they've actually given up waiting for my orders, and they're just dropping stuff off now for me.
That's a good system for you.
Making my life.
That's a great system. I think that's better, actually.
Yeah, they're just
bring me stuff and I'll deal with it.
They show up and they're like, here's a case of tomatoes. And yeah, I had Grace from Bates Beach show up there. She said, I got some blueberries and I got some tomatoes for you. I'm like, perfect.
Cool. I bought a couple of tomatoes from Grace this weekend.
Yeah.
I wanted to buy a bunch because I want to make more tomato sauce, but time constraints.
Time constraints, of course.
There's only so much I can bring into my kitchen.
True enough.
I need some helpers. Can I borrow some of your guys' helpers?
Yeah, I'm a little stretched thin right now, but at the end of the summer, we can talk.
What are you doing after work on Saturday? Why don't you come up to my house and make tomato sauce?
I'll be there about 1.
Oh, okay. I'm usually sleeping by then. Yeah always. No, I had a good weekend, though.
Yeah, like you should tell us a little bit about, because you stepped up and did the bike tour.
Yeah, I went and did the Comox Valley Farm Cycle Tour on Saturday with my daughter. We left from the fairgrounds. Well, we went to the farmer's market first, did a couple of things, bought some Island Soda Works beverages for post-ride refreshment, and a couple other odds and ends. And then, yeah, we got registered and we went off, cycled through Dove Creek. We only hit 2 farms. We had some time issues, so couldn't spend all day puttering about. But we went to McClintock's farm, who I found out the owner's wife and I have a cousin in common, which was kind of random and weird.
Gotta love small towns.
Yeah. So yeah, we toured their berry patches. They have raspberries and blueberries in UPIC right now. And then we got to go see their water buffalo.
Oh wow.
This is their milking water buffalo. They have rebuilt an old dairy parlor, because the farm at one time was a dairy farm.
Okay.
And it had been removed, and I'm not sure what all has been done there. I know they did some beef cows previously, the McClintocks have, since they've owned it. And but yeah, now they're doing these water buffalo, and they're selling the milk to natural pastures for making mozzarella and stuff.
Oh, excellent, because we had some natural pastures cheese tonight with our dinner. So
yeah.
I wish I'd known. I would have
gotten some. I've been running a caprese salad for about 2 months now.
Have you?
Ever since tomatoes came on.
Perfect.
Yeah, we got to, they gave us a sample of the mozzarella, and yeah, it was quite tasty.
Yeah, mozzarella and fresh tomatoes are,
yeah.
Is life any better?
Yeah, it's an easy salad to pump out in the summertime.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and then after that, my goal for the ride was to get to Tanitus Farms, because I've never been, and I've been eating bacon from them for years.
And our producer here, Drex, has been bugging us to.
Yes, that's for sure. Yeah, so I had to go out there and network a bit and try and talk to them about coming on the podcast. So, and it sounds like they're pretty excited about joining us for an interview at some point in the future.
That's excellent. And they were give you some sausage too, eh?
Yeah, she gave me a package of pear and blue cheese pork sausages. So, and we ate those tonight.
They're quite tasty.
In our pregame meal with some other various things. So, yeah, they were delicious. I'm not really a big blue cheese person, but Heather told me that she's not a blue cheese person either, and she didn't find them too strong, so I didn't either.
Yeah, I am honestly not a big blue cheese fan, but they have that little blue cheese taste to them, but they're quite nice. There's a little sweetness from the pear in there too. So.
Yeah, no, it was good. And they, you know, they got a nice, they don't have a lot at their little farm stand there because they have so many big customers that are taking like all their pork. So,
sorry about that.
Yeah.
I honestly can't even get their pork loin anymore. So I think you must be stealing some of their pork loin, or is that?
No, I don't get any loin. I get bellies and hams and shoulders.
Oh, yeah.
I've been doing the hams and the bacon, doing our lard on. So those are always fabulous. So.
Yeah, I managed to find in the back of the freezer 4 pork steaks that I cooked for dinner on Saturday night, so I was quite happy to get that.
Excellent.
And then I got some bacon from them, and yeah, they had quite a bit of beef, though, in their freezer, and a fair amount of chicken and lots of sausage. It's just the cuts of pork that...
Because they do a grass-fed...
Grass-fed black Angus beef, yeah.
Yeah.
And the chickens, they have those chicken tractors
right.
that they move every day or every other day. So the chickens are always on fresh grass. So they have fresh bedding and it helps fertilize the field and stuff. So.
And you got to sign in and sign out after seeing the...
Yeah, down to the high health hogs.
Yes.
So they're really particular about keeping diseases away from their herd.
And figuring out who's been in there and who hasn't. So.
Yeah, so they can trace it back if something does happen. But yeah, no, that was cool. Like, they have a ton of pigs out there. Holy cow. I mean, we couldn't go in to see them because they're inside barns, but you can look inside one of them and see them.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Pink pigs everywhere. One of the best inspection ratings in BC.
They do.
Super clean, super healthy pigs.
I was very impressed how clean they have. They must work quite hard at that. Even though I don't think the pigs are what people normally think of. Dirty old pigs, you know.
No, they're very clean. They're pink and clean. And
yeah, fresh sawdust in there. So, yeah, it's a very nice product.
Yeah.
Property that they have going there. So
it is, yeah. Yeah, that was pretty cool. I also spoke with Hans Peter Meyer.
Hans Peter Meyer, yes.
At Tanitus Farms, too. And so I hadn't met him before, but that was good to put a name to a face and touch base, so.
He is a big foodie in the Comox Valley, and he's definitely connected to everyone in the restaurant business for some reason. He likes to really talk about food, and he really likes to promote food in the Comox Valley. So
Yeah. Well, hopefully we'll be able to pick his brain for some events and different things that are happening.
Definitely. He can keep us on track with what's going on.
Yeah,
so.
Totally. Yeah, and then we just bought all that meat, so I thought, okay, we better get home, so... Cycled back. We took the one spot trail that's an old railway grade in Dove Creek. And no sooner we got on the trail than we ran into a big black bear. He was hanging out on the trail. So
excellent.
I had to pause and do lots of shouting and clapping and get him moving. And
right.
And then we came home, or we came back to the car. Then I drove to Ashbury Farm and I picked up 10 fresh broiler chickens and some cucumbers, some pickling cucumbers. So then I went home and I spent a couple hours chopping up chickens and vacuum packing it and getting it in the deep freeze. So
getting yourself ahead for the winter.
Yeah, my deep freeze is almost full.
Actually, I saw your pictures there on Facebook there with the food that you brought in. It was quite impressive.
It was a pretty full table, wasn't it?
Yes. Good shopping.
Yeah, thanks. And and then on Sunday I made some pickles and I picked up my great-grandmother's fermenting crock from my grandma's house.
All right. Can you describe that a bit?
It's just a big stone crock. It's a 3-gallon bucket, I guess you would kind of say.
Right.
But it's, just a big vessel, and I put cucumbers and salt water in there and some dill and some garlic, and I'm going to let them ferment on my counter for a couple of weeks, and they'll turn into pickles, and then I'll just put them in the fridge.
I'll have to come over and visit in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, they should be good.
I just put up 16 liters.
Nice.
Did you?
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, this
Freedom Farm cukes.
Fermenting
good,
is
good
so
stuff
cool
over there. So.
Yeah. And I picked some blackberries too. They're starting to get ripe now. So
I did my first thing with blackberries. I did a little blackberry sage chutney to this weekend with the couple dishes, which is a favorite of mine. You get that sweet and sweet and sour, so it's a good taste combination. So
excellent. Yeah, I'm pretty excited about just trying to get out a couple of times a week and just stockpile some.
Yeah, berries are out there right now, so.
Yeah.
Excellent. So other news in the Comox Valley, I know big restaurant opening this weekend. They had the Prime Chop House and Wine Bar opened up on Friday night.
Right.
So that's a big restaurant for the Comox Valley with over 200 seats in it. So be interesting to go check that out. I know I'm going to have to sneak in there and do a little surveillance on what's going on. So
I think that might make it the biggest restaurant in the valley now.
It is the biggest in the valley. And apparently it's absolutely beautiful inside. So definitely something to take a look at if you want to check out.
Yeah.
Not that I want to pull from any other restaurants like Avenue Bistro or Atlas Cafe. But it is a nice, interesting new spot that just opened up. And I also noticed that the La Cabana Mexican restaurant has moved into the old Dynasty restaurant or Chinese restaurant. So
closer to town.
Closer to town. Bring in some more customers and stuff like that, hopefully for them. So
yeah,
I've heard some good stuff. I talked to a few people who have been in there and had some good meals. So it's always something new that you should give a check out if you're interested in checking out new food around the Comox Valley.
Yeah, good. I should also add that I forgot when we were talking about the farm bike tour. If you want to read about what we did, you can read about it on my blog, thecynicalcyclist.ca. I did a big posting about it yesterday. So
perfect. Yeah, I did go through that and check out some of the pictures
there. Yeah,
so looks like the two of you had fun there.
Yeah, it was good. You can see the chicken tractors and the water buffalo. The one little water buffalo wanted to come home with us, one of the calves. Yeah, it's cute as buttons, but
your yard's not big enough.
Not really. I'm not allowed to have backyard hens. I don't think a water buffalo will fit in the
that doesn't work in Cumberland right now.
No.
All right. Well, I guess we're on to the reason we came here today is to talk to Aaron and find out a little bit about him and a little bit about Avenue Bistro. So a little bit about Avenue Bistro is it's a sister restaurant to Atlas Cafe. Opened in October 2007 on Comox Avenue. Aaron, I believe you joined in September of 2008.
Yep, beginning of September of the next year.
Yes.
2008, yeah.
So you've been there, what, 4 years?
It'll be 4 years this month, yeah.
That's a good time. And actually, I don't know if you've ever known this, but I was talking with Sandra Viney, the owner of Avenue Bistro, and she told me that one of the reasons that the success that they've had with Avenue is because of what you've brought to the restaurant. With your passion for food and your commitment to the business. So just wanted to start out with that to sort of say who you are and that's what we want to find out a little bit about who you are and what drives you to do what you do.
That's a pretty big compliment from your boss. That's great. It's nice to hear. You maybe don't hear things like that often coming straight from the person, so.
Because most of the time they're telling you what you're doing wrong.
Well, yeah, maybe. Things could always be better, right?
Yeah, there's always little things you can do, but it's definitely know that you're appreciated.
That's always my, impetus is that you can always be better.
That's right.
Always strive to be better. And, Thomas Keller has a saying that you strive for perfection with the realization that you cannot reach it. So that I try for perfection, but know that I won't hit it.
Right.
I just try to keep progressing, getting better.
Getting a little better every day. So I guess to start out, like, how did you get into the cooking profession? How did that all happen for you?
Oh, stumbled pretty much.
Like most
of us? I
got
my first restaurant job when I was 13.
Young.
Wow.
I was a grill cook at Burger King.
Ah,
flame broiled.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, that was my introduction to the restaurant industry, and I did not get scared away. When I was 16, I took a job at a Tex-Mex restaurant in my hometown, Ottawa, and did a little bit of everything. I bussed. I washed dishes. I prepped. I was a bar back. It was a bartender, server.
They threw you in wherever they needed
fill
you.
Fill in, line cook, just a little bit of everything. And I don't know, I like the camaraderie of the restaurant industry and the team concept. You know, I grew up playing a lot of team sports, hockey and soccer, and so I loved how the kitchen was a, you know, a bunch of individuals working towards a common goal, and, right. and you know, they all sweated it out together, and at the end, people were happy. You know, people were fed and satisfied, and came out for celebrations and family gatherings, and you know, you were a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. That's what dragged you into it. So,
yeah, and then after high school, I moved out to Vancouver Island. Wanted to be near Vancouver, but not in Vancouver. I'm not a huge fan of big cities. I grew up in a lot of big cities, and I was not really looking for that. So Victoria seemed like a nice, small, quaint seaside town to start some roots, and stumbled into a restaurant job, and ended up working under Matt McDonald, who is now an executive chef here in the Valley. It's at the Berwick.
Kind of neat that you sort of followed him
in
up
Comox.
This way.
He actually works about 4 blocks away from me, which is interesting.
That's
considering
kind of bizarre.
That he sponsored my apprenticeship, and I worked under him for 5 years.
5 years in Victoria.
In Victoria, and after my apprenticeship, I went exploring lots of different experiences, things to add to my resume. I was a pastry chef. A brewer, a baker, a line cook, sous chef, did a little bit of everything.
Sounds like you sort of bounced around a little bit there.
Yeah,
wow.
And when my wife finished school and we found ourselves with no real ties to Victoria anymore, we started talking about where we wanted to end up. And Up Island was always in the plans, I guess. Victoria kind of grew into a bigger city than I had really wanted.
Now, your wife is originally from here, is
it? No, she is. She was born in Calgary.
Oh, was she? Okay.
She grew up in Victoria.
Right.
But she has 2 sisters here in the Valley, and so we were coming closer to family for her. Also, for me, my dad lives in Nanoose, so he's pretty close.
Okay.
And I've got family in Vancouver, so I can always hop a ferry over there. And I guess part of the appeal of the Valley was, you know, beautiful things to do in the summer. You know, I just went tubing down the Pont Ledge a couple times today. And in the winter, we've got the mountain snowboarding and snowshoeing and cross-country skiing and all sorts of fun things to do there. And as a chef, I was coming from Victoria, which has, let's say, 400 restaurants and a couple dozen farms in the Victoria area, trying to supply them or partly anyway.
Partly, yes.
You know, and coming to the Valley with, I don't know, 180 farms and, you know, only a couple dozen restaurants to compete for the product. So, you know, I get to have one-on-one relationships with oyster farmers and fishermen and pig farmers and cheesemakers and winemakers, just basically everything's here at your fingertips, and
it's one of the bonuses of living here.
A lot of perks.
Yes, definitely. As a chef, you get to hands-on with the product straight off the farm. So,
yeah, you couldn't ask for anything more as a chef. I know this area of Canada has been called, a little Provence or even slightly Tuscany, mm-hmm. but you know, I think we've got our own interesting mix of ingredients that can always keep you busy.
And it's just growing now. That's what we've kind of, my feeling is at least.
Well, there's room here to grow. And, you know, Victoria, you know, all the real estate's been taken up for decades. There's not a lot of room for growth there.
And no.
You know, sure, you can go to Langford or Souk or Jordan River or even further. But, you know, the Valley is a nice, easily accessible, beautiful piece of real estate.
Yeah. It's definitely drawing. I know there's been a large influx of chefs from Victoria moving up this way. I mean, I could almost say myself, I left and went down to Victoria for a few years and then popped back here just because I just loved hearing them talk about all the great stuff down there. And I was like, there's great stuff here, but yeah, I know.
I've been dining in Las Vegas or Montreal or New York, and they have our products on their menus.
Yeah, know? They're looking for our stuff, so.
Fanny Bay oysters and, you know, Hollywood oysters.
yeah,
are in Los Angeles now.
Wow,
that's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, she's really expanded her operations, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember when Hollywood was just, she had her one little beach and she was doing it on her own, and then...
I'm grateful to be her first customer.
Yeah.
That was a good connection for
that
you.
That was
right?
A good, good...
Yeah, a good Holly and I were co-workers at Fanny Bay Oysters years ago, so...
She's a wonderful lady.
Yeah, she is.
Just a joy to deal with in every way.
Yeah.
So, just a little bit more about yourself. How would you describe your cooking style? How do you interpret food? How do you make food?
Well, that's an interesting question, and I'm sure there's lots of answers. I guess, strictly speaking, I'm French trained, and so my mind always starts with a French concept, maybe. You know, I'm pretty respectful of foundations and the building blocks of cooking. You know, stocks and mother sauces, and you know, for me, a lot of my cooking comes from that. And I feel like my restaurant is a bistro, which to me is a casual neighborhood restaurant. And so, you know, for me, the food has to be accessible. It has to have some sort of connection, you know, to the diner. Maybe evoke a little bit of memory or a flavor pairing that's, you know, comforting or, you know, I think classics are classics for a reason. And, right. You know, tomatoes and basil, they go together, and, you know, you shouldn't really try to mess with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I always say to new cooks is that everything's been done before.
Mm-hmm.
And
And if you want to make a mark, you have to do it right.
Right.
It's true, but, you know, you can give the same recipe to 10 different cooks and they can do it 10 different ways, you know, and each one can come out a little bit different. And, you know, there's so much room for expression with different cooks and different chefs. And, you know, I guess in a restaurant, you're trying to harness that while still, you know, still have the diner have a dependable experience, mm-hmm. you know, something they can come back to and get repeated, you know, maybe not exactly, but, you know, with the same feeling or
it's that consistency or that people find in your food, I guess, is the giving that passion behind it. So yeah, definitely. So now your cooking style too, is you started off as a baker, is that where you find your
After I finished my apprenticeship, I was fortunate enough to be working in a restaurant with a master pastry chef and a master baker.
Where was that at?
That was at the Marina.
At the Marina, down in Victoria.
And so after I'd finished my apprenticeship, I think I was expected to go into a sous chef position. And I asked instead to move into the bakery because I was really interested in what they were doing there and I wanted to learn about it. And luckily I had a boss who allowed me to do that. You know, Matt McDonald was okay with that and allowed me to go into the pastry shop. And I ended up working in the pastry shop for another 2.5 years. And I covered the baker's days off. And, you know, they had 7 or 8 different wild sourdoughs that were produced every day, plus specialty items and a 10-item dessert menu with house-made ice creams and sorbets, and very, very good experience for a young chef.
Yeah.
And I was happy to take it. And, you know, I was so infatuated with pastry that I ended up moving to a patisserie in Victoria, Patisserie Danielle, run by Daniel Vauquier there, a brilliant French pastry chef. And I did another further 2 years with him, just fine tuning, you know, cake making and patisserie skills. You know, in the middle of summer, we'd be making, you know, 2 dozen wedding cakes on a Saturday.
Holy cow.
Starting at 2 o'clock in the morning and finishing sometime in the afternoon. And
just,
you know, 3 or 4 person team. Fabricating wedding cakes all day.
Wow.
It's very interesting. And
no kidding.
He also had the wholesale contract for the Starbucks chain on Vancouver Island. So
wow.
We were producing thousands of scones and danishes and croissants and muffins and biscotti and cookies and just a good experience.
Yeah. So you're the guy making all the biscotti that I've had at Starbucks over the years.
Well, for me, for a couple of years, anyway.
What's the difference between a pastry chef and a baker?
Well, a pastry chef, you know, is someone who deals a lot with, you know, cakes and chocolates and the sweet part of a meal, say.
Okay.
Whereas a baker focuses more on breads, crackers, you know, different kinds of, you know, anything from sourdough to hazelnut fig bread or a French baguette or pizza dough. And yeah, they're quite different.
Yeah.
I would say, you know, I would compare just through my experience that baking is a lot like, say, brewing, you know, beer, where you have a pretty limited set of ingredients.
Right.
With beer, you have water, hops, barley, and yeast. And
yeah,
with baking, you have flour, water, and salt, and sometimes yeast.
Right.
You know, and yet you can get a pretty infinite variation of product from that.
Right.
Whereas a pastry chef, you know, has a lot to do with chocolate and fruit and sugar work and,
mm-hmm.
And custards and that kind of thing.
So it's, you can do a whole bunch more of, you have a lot more different ingredients as a base versus.
Definitely. Well, you know, yeah, every fruit.
Yeah.
Type of chocolate, nut, yeah. Different sugars or honeys, maple syrup, eggs, you know, just eggs and sugar, you know, can give you a million different variations.
Right.
Whether it's a souffle or a creme caramel or.
Yeah, it's, you know, pretty much the sky's the limit on eggs. And
yeah. Huh. Cool. I'm learning new things all the time.
So Aaron, you you did your apprenticeship under Matt McDonald, and then you did your schooling down in Victoria. And
yeah, through Camosun.
Camosun College, excellent.
We're all Camosun graduates here.
We've all done Camosun College, so has that helped you in your career? Do you find?
Oh, definitely. You know, it even just allowing, you know, the interaction, you know. Because I did a practical apprenticeship, I wasn't in school a whole lot, but, you know, just going through a program like that where you get to connect with so many other people in the industry, you know, a lot of the people that I went to school with, you know, I still keep in contact with today, and they're valuable allies, you know, in the cooking industry.
For sure. Yeah. I'm always funny how I keep running into them over the years. They keep
definitely
popping up.
And that's something I never would have had without that scholastic experience.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, a lot of people probably don't know, but the cooking program is into a 3-year apprenticeship program, basically. And I forget the hours that you have to accomplish on site, but I think it's about
6,000
or so. And then I think when we both did it, we had a month of school or 4 weeks of school.
Yeah. And I'd finished my hours in my second year.
Yeah.
I've always been a bit of a workaholic.
As a chef, a workaholic? I've never heard that before.
Yeah, that's strange.
This is our awkward pause moment where we sort of...
Are we having an awkward pause?
Yeah.
Just catching our breath.
We always hit about the 30-minute mark, so... okay, so here's a great question for you. So what do you like most about your job, or what do you love most about your job? Because you must love it if you've done it for this long.
I love the rhythm of a practiced job. You know, just there's something comforting about peeling a carrot, or, you know, or dicing an onion, making a stock, you know, and doing it well. It's a very rhythmic experience. You know, it gets you very in tune with something that's essential, right? Nourishment. Everybody's got to eat. So my grandmother told me when I started my apprenticeship, well, everybody's got to eat, you know, and I'm going to help feed them.
That's right. And so when you're at home, what do you do for food? Are you, do you cook much at home, or is that a...
Well, on the rare occasions where I am at home, I usually split the duties with my wife. You know, if she cooks, I'll wash the dishes, or if I cook, she'll wash the dishes. But yeah, you know, I also love the experience of cooking at home because it's outside of the boundaries of work. You know, at work, I do have the structure of a menu that I stick to and the same jobs, like I say.
The whole format of
what repetition. And at home, you know, I have the freedom to just cook whatever I want. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I can make breakfast for dinner or dinner for breakfast.
Yeah. I read something the other day that we are the only mammal species that varies our what we eat at different meals. No other animal does that.
Oh, right.
I guess we have the ability because we have brains and stuff. But
opposable thumbs.
Yeah, I think that the point of it was that, you know, why do we only have certain things for breakfast? We can eat them for dinner. It doesn't matter. It's not like you need that certain food source just at certain points of the day. So
I think there's some good thinking to eating your dessert first. You know, you right. process what you eat first, you know, so if you eat the fatty, sugary thing first, it's more easily digested and used up in right. energy, and then you eat the healthy thing later.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
And that's what gets stored in your body, the healthy minerals and vitamins.
Mm. There's something, maybe there's something to that.
Don't tell my daughter that. I'm full, Dad. I can't have dinner now.
I eat too much chocolate cake.
Yeah.
Chocolate cake. So I guess now we should get into a little bit about Avenue Bistro. So what is the concept of the bistro?
Well, again, it's a bistro, which is a casual neighborhood restaurant. I would say that 90% of our clientele are Comox people, and they live near the restaurant. And I think that's really nice to have. You know, in Victoria, I was in a very seasonal town where there was a lot of tourists. You know, and then the tourists went away, and then there was a lot of locals, and there was a lot of ebb and flow, whereas I see the same people in January that I see in July and September and April. And it's nice to have that loyalty and connection to the people that I feed.
Yeah, well, it's nice to develop that connection with your customers, so I know that feeling for sure. And Avenue Bistro, how many seats do you have in that restaurant?
92 inside, and we have a patio. So on nice days, it goes up to 116.
116, which is a good size restaurant for you.
Pretty good size.
Yeah. And how many staff do you have in the kitchen there?
I think there's 8.
8? And you break the restaurant into, or the kitchen into several positions, right? So you have...
Definitely, I'm French trained, so I run on a brigade system, and so the grill, boucher, butcher position, you know, is separate from the pans or saucier, and then the garde manger, the cold side, is another aspect of the kitchen. It's three stations.
Three stations.
Pretty small, yeah.
Pretty small.
You know, you can only fit a couple more people than that in there at any one time anyway, so.
And you do in-house baking and pastries?
Yeah, we make all our own
and
breads and desserts, except for the coconut cream pie, which comes from the Atlas. And it's very popular.
Very popular.
People call to see if it's there before they come in.
Sheila,
my babe. They've even been known to order it before anything else in their meal.
Wow.
Just to make sure they have a piece at the end.
I listen to Sheila every weekend going, why am I making another coconut cream pie? And I'm like, Sheila, they love you.
Don't make them so good, Sheila.
She can't do it any other way, I think. So
she needs an armed guard to take the pies over to across the bridge.
Pretty much sometimes, I think so. And you also do other special events at Avenue Bistro.
Yeah, this week we did the Mayor's Luncheon.
Right.
On BC Day.
Which was out-of-house catering.
Yeah, that was right across from City Hall in the Astair House.
Right.
And it was a buffet lunch for $90.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah.
Especially with the parade going on, I heard.
Yeah, it was interesting logistically with the parade happening and nautical days and Philberg was still on. So there was some added element of challenge there.
Good times.
But yeah, we made it work. That's
pulled
that's
it
what
off.
You do, right?
Yep.
And you do other you do a bit of catering from there, like out of house caterings, but you also do, you have a chef's table that you've done. I was lucky enough to do one with you.
Yeah, we started this year instituting a monthly chef's table, which is a sort of a big table where everyone sits together and eats the same meal. at the same time. And, you know, just a shared experience to encourage communal dining and to dine with strangers as well, to get to know the people in your neighborhood, to quote Sesame Street.
Right. That's sort of how this whole Edible Valley thing started for ourselves, as the whole Sesame Street. Get to know the people in your neighborhood.
Yeah.
So you, with these dinners, you do a local theme to them. You try and bring in a fresh...
Yeah, they've all had different themes to them, I guess, or different producers that we've paired with. And, you know, Tinnitus Farms and Hollywood Oysters and Natural Pastures and Beaufort Wines and local breweries, the Phillips Brewing Company and the Hoyne Brewing Company, and just... Yeah, just bringing local producers together on one table and getting people to experience it, you know,
showcase there,
in a communal sense.
Beautiful. Do you have any other ones planned coming up here? Or are you?
Yeah, we'll be doing one at the end of September. So, not sure if that'll be the 20th or the 27th, but I think we'll squeeze one in there.
Yeah, when you find out, let us know, and we'll let people know about it through Edible Valley.
Probably just say the 20th, because the 27th is my wife's birthday, so I'll be taking that day off.
Probably better to do it on the 20th.
Good on you for remembering what day your birthday is, too.
So actually, another being in the kitchen, what's the strangest request you've ever got from a customer? Putting you on the spot here, I know.
Strangest.
Come on the Edible Valley podcast.
I've had people request that I cook food they bring from home, which is unusual.
A bit strange, yeah.
I'm not sure even of the legality of it. just not sure if we can...
Do that without knowing where it came.
Do that, with a safe chain of custody. I've had people ask me to shuck their crab for them or cut up their steak. You get lots of requests. I mean, but I think the nature of a chef is to accommodate people and to please them. So, I figure whatever will make them happy, you just do it. And they're strange and there's normal requests, but, as a chef, you just do them both.
Because at the end of the day, I guess it's all about making the customer happy.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how you get them to come back. So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, we're not in the no business.
No.
Doesn't more work. More of a yes.
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, sir. So why buy local?
I think there's lots of documentaries out there that can answer that question, but I believe that, if you can buy a carrot that came from a local farmer's field instead of a carrot that was trucked up from Mexico, then you're probably doing better, better at protecting the environment with the former. I think there's some gratitude in, like I said, dealing with people on a personal face-to-face basis where where the product came from and you can go see it, go visit it and have a visceral attachment to what you're eating.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, food's more nourishing that way. I saw a bumper sticker today that said, "Friends don't let friends eat farm fish."
And, yeah, that's a good one.
As much as I love that sentiment, the oceans aren't going to last very long if we don't start finding a way to sustainably farm fish.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's right.
And dealing with aquaculture, oyster growers and scallop growers and clams and mussels, that's kind of the way we're headed. And you have to look at every aspect of sustainable eating, just saying that something's wild or, you can have an organic tomato from Ecuador, but does it make sense to have it shipped across the world to eat it in Comox?
I don't think so. That's just it, yeah.
Just because something's local or organic doesn't necessarily mean it's better, but it's always better to be a better informed diner.
Yeah.
That's definitely something in this town that is definitely growing, is it? The consumer is definitely more informed about where they're...
I think people are a lot more aware of where their food's coming from, and that can only be a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great for us because it challenges us to put more energy into what we do, so... Well, I'd like to thank Aaron for talking to us. I do have two questions before you go. Well, not that we're going to make you go and finish off the podcast here, but the first question is, what is your favorite thing about the Comox Valley and what keeps you here?
The people. It's a great little town, you know, everybody, you know, is friendly and you know, it's that nice laid back West Coast island living. Everybody's in a good mood, and you know, you got to remember, I grew up in Ottawa, and just to be out of 5 months of winter is fantastic.
Yeah.
Because you were, what, tubing before you came here today?
Yes, tubing down the river.
Losing your shoes.
Lost my sandals. If anyone sees a pair of green Crocs out there...
Those belong to you?
Just swing them by the restaurant. I'll buy you lunch.
Whoa, that's a good deal.
I know where Blaine's going now. Yes,
yeah, I'm going to go find a net.
And my last question for you tonight is from my daughter, Michaela. And she asks you, what's going to be in the panna cotta tomorrow?
Ooh. Peaches or plums?
Peaches or plums? Yeah. Because she is a panna cotta fan.
She's been eating a lot of berries lately with the panna cotta. But, you know, I might have to switch it up.
Switch it up.
Okanagan peaches are looking pretty good right now.
Excellent. Excellent. I will let her know. She'll be happy to hear that.
Very good. Well, thank you, Aaron. That was a good chat. And I've only eaten at Avenue once, I think, since it's been open. So I'll have to get over there again and have a sample of what you're doing.
Must live in Courtney.
Actually, I live in Cumberland. It's even further away.
Like I said, 90% of our business is local. So
yeah.
It's hard to get people up that hill.
Yeah. Well, it's so nice that people can walk to the restaurant, too. I mean, it's this time of year especially. Go for a nice stroll down Main Street and go have dinner and stroll home. And
you can have a nice bottle of wine and not have to worry about it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You just go and enjoy yourself. So
yeah.
And it's a nice view there. Nice, comfortable spot to be. So
yeah.
So I guess now we should talk about upcoming events.
Yeah.
That are going on.
So we got the Comox Valley Exhibition is coming up 23rd, 24th. Oh, sorry, the 24th, 25th, 26th of August at the fairgrounds in Courtney.
Lots to do with agriculture there and food and a lot of events. I was noticing a few flyers up around town. So
right, yeah, it's always a pretty big draw for people.
I hope I get a chance to sneak over there a little bit and check it all out. So
yeah. Mount Washington Food and Wine Festival is also on the 24th of, is it the 24th or 25th?
Oh, I think it's the
25th. Yeah. I don't have that in my notes for some silly reason. I've said it the last bunch of weeks. But anyways, the 25th of August on Mount Washington. Tickets are available on the Mount Washington website.
It starts on the 24th, I think.
Is it start Does on it? The 24th?
I think on the 24th they have
wine and
a wine tasting.
Right.
But the 25th is the gala wine pairing dinner.
Dinner. That's correct. So, yeah, that'll be a big food and wine event up Mount Washington. So we always got the farmer's market with the chef's day on the September 8th.
Yep.
That should be a fun one. I don't know if Aaron wants to come down for that and play with the Chef's Association and do we get a whole bunch. We go around all the vendors with a wheelbarrow, bring it back to a center tent and just cook and just create.
No, that sounds terrible.
Yeah,
that's not up my alley at all.
It's totally not into your element at all. I know it might be. Yeah, it was a fun event. We went from making French toast with huckleberries, I think, at one moment to duck egg omelets to I think I was doing sushi or tuna pan-seared tuna with a blueberry aioli, and yeah, it just was as much as we could make, as fast as we could make it, and there was just lineups of people just in there for a sample. So
you might not get what we're making at the moment, but by the time you get up there, you will get something.
So. Yeah, that's awesome. I can't wait to see that. It's going to be a great time.
And the other big event that we keep pushing, and I'm super excited about, is Flavor. So I know they're getting bugging me about settling down with what I'm actually going to do.
Do you have a producer?
I am doing, yes, BC Wild Salmon.
Nice.
So.
And I am paired with Tanadice Farm.
Tanadice Farm. Yeah. So we will both be down there for the event.
Something porky.
Something porky? Have you figured out what it is, or you're still keeping that
still
a little
mulling
secret?
It over. Yeah.
Yeah. I have ideas. Then I'm like, I don't know if I got time.
It's the week after Feast of Fields, so.
Right.
I got a little bit to worry about before that.
So you're going to be down at Feast of Fields, and that is the September.
It's the week before Flavor, which is the 15th, I think.
That sounds about right.
And and then the one big table will be followed shortly after that.
The one big table, and then
Flavor.
Flavor. So you're going to have a busy, busy week there.
And then my wife's birthday.
Right. What's this Feast of Fields event you're talking of? I'm not familiar with it.
Feast of Fields is something that's been going on for about 18 years.
I think it's really where Flavor came from.
Yeah, I think the idea for Flavor came from Feast of Fields. And
okay.
Feast of Fields is something that's held in, I think, every province in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
It started with Michael Stadlander in Agonson Farms in Toronto.
Okay.
Spread out to the West Coast. Victoria's, I think, in their 18th year this year.
Mm-hmm.
I think Vancouver is in their 13th year. I think they started 5 years after Victoria. But the Okanagan also has an event. And this year's Vancouver Island Festival takes place at Alderley Vineyards, I believe, which is just outside of Duncan.
Right. Okay.
So it's... It's a gathering of winemakers, cideries, breweries, restaurants, bakeries, farmers, cheesemakers from all over the island, really. I know people from Tofino and the Valley and all the way down to Victoria participate. There has been in the past a Comox Valley booth, which I've been a part of. Renaud Saint-Pierre is often there with locals. Natural Pastures takes part every year. So, you know, we all walk around the farmer's field and sample food and wine from around the island.
It's a great showcase of what
Vancouver. Or in my case, I dish it out. But
that's
also fun.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's nice to have that one-on-one with people when you're handing out the food.
Yeah, in the kitchen, you don't often get the experience of the consumer in that instant gratification way.
Mm-hmm. You're usually locked behind a line that you...
Last year, I made the mistake of barbecuing 700 or 800 little Toulouse sausages. And so the smell of barbecuing sausages was wafting through the farmer's field. I had a lineup about 100 deep for about an hour and a half, 2 hours, and that was fun. Making people happy.
That's what it's all about.
Everyone likes grilled meat, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. That reminds me of when I was at the Kingfisher and we'd do the seafood buffets in the summertime, and I'd be out there on a barbecue grilling or sautéing something, prawns or langoustines or something, and I'd always just hit the pan with butter and garlic and get that going, and people were just drooling when they walked. Oh yeah,
I think there's an old story I heard about a guy who would fry up a bunch of garlic and butter and then walk around his restaurant just before he opened the doors.
Oh yeah,
just to get people salivating when they walk through the doors.
Yeah, there's something about that
good
smell.
It's a good trick.
It is a great trick. Yeah, you get that nice smell of anything frying, and the people just love it. So.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's wonderful. Well, thanks for listening to the Edible Valley Podcast. Check out our website, ediblevalley.podbean.com. Like us on Facebook and follow our Twitter feed at Edible Valley. Email us with your comments or who you want to have on the show, ediblevalley@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and remember, keep it local.